session 9 in this church planting course. The topic for this session concerns gathering a core group. In the mentoring course we offer here at Trinity, a course I highly recommend, I tell about wanting to assist a young church planter, but not being the right mentor for him because he looked to his church network for support and instruction and did not consider my input to apply toward the kind of church he wanted to start, basically a clone of his father's church. He failed as a church planter. Within 3 months of the time his family moved to a new city, he was ready to go back home. And by the time school was out, they packed up the grandkids and moved back home. Well, whether my counsel could have turned things around for him, I don't know. But I do know this. He tried to jump immediately to doing church without gathering a core group. When he started Sunday services at an elementary school, he and his wife and two small children were it. No musicians, no child care workers, no greeters or ushers. Just come to our new church. They advertised, and so some people actually came that first Sunday, but they didn't stay. In his eagerness to start Sunday services, he neglected to start a core group. His home church did not have cell groups or small groups, so he didn't know how to start one. He literally thought that if he put a sign out on the street near the school that he'd be able to start a church. Well, his wife put together a nice website. He was sincere. He had lots of ideas about things that he wanted to do. He even had a full salary from his home church for the first 6 months. But it never occurred to him that he had to start by gathering a group of people who also wanted to see a new church in their city. Paul's strategy was to start in the synagogue and tell the people who were looking for Messiah that Messiah had come, as Acts 13:14-43 indicates. Paul started with the ones who immediately believed and the ones who said they would hear more about this, Acts 17:32. Forming a core group is one of the hardest tasks in the process of planting a new church, Ed Stetzer says. Not only is initial gathering of the core group often difficult, but many church planters I've known have wished that they would have been more selective in their formation of the core group. As to their dismay, some members of the core group were not core group material. Now, from personal experience and from observation, consider some people you do not want in your core group. Now, if family or friends sound like any of the following, assure them that you love them, and there'll be a place for them later in the church's development. But for now, the best way they can assist is through their prayers at a distance. Well, there's the own agenda elder. Yes, there will be a time when leadership roles are defined, but be wary. Be careful of people who announce to you that they want to be your elder, as in telling you what to do. As the church planter, you are the vision caster. The new church is your vision, and you need people with you in the core group who believe in your vision, not people with their own agenda. Pastors who have learned how to work with committees in churches sometimes have difficulty making the transition to being a visionary leader. It's not that the church planter needs to be surrounded by a bunch of yes people, but the church planter does need to have the freedom to hear from God and set the course for the church without interference from wannabe leaders. Unfortunately, what occurs is that well-meaning people who were never considered leaders in their former churches jockey for leadership roles in the new church. One church planter lost a major donor when the church planter firmly but gently said, "No, we're not going to do it that way." The would-be elder had advocated an evangelistic approach that had been successful decades before in rural areas, and this urban church planter wisely said, "This is what we're doing instead, and here's why." Well, raise up leaders, recruit and train leaders, but watch out for volunteers to be leaders when you're not asking for volunteers in that department. Another category would be the whiny, needy, time consumers. Now, please sense my heart about this. You want your church to be able to help needy people. But if your core group has people who drain all of your time, all of your energy and resources, then you'll find it difficult to attract people who can attract others. New churches are like magnets to the whiny, needy time consumers. Often needing in-depth Christian counseling, they're adept at making any small group meeting into group therapy, as they dominate discussion and ministry times. One church plant almost did not get off the ground because of a woman who was still bitter over the death of her teenage son. Her bitterness was mostly directed at the church she had belonged to at the time, and her downcast demeanor affected the group. Yes, she needed ministry, but that first group of a church plant was not the place for all her needs to be met. At the risk of the woman reacting to more rejection, the church planter had to tell her so. Your needs are greater than our group can address at this time. We hope to grow to be the kind of church where you can get the help you need to help people like you, but we're not there yet. Another category, and this category just spans theological perspective, is the chrismatic. New churches attract chrismatics as if these people had sonar devices. You know the type. They've been in every church in town, cruising from one church to another, always finding fault, and since they've not yet found the perfect church, they've got plenty to say about how your new church ought to be. Chrismatics usually have lots of friends, also disgruntled former members. And if a church planter, desperate for new people, is not careful, the chrismatics can swoop in, take over, and divide the church when they leave, which they usually do, and most often at a key moment in the development of the new church. Chrismatics are often quirky, a bit on the weird side, yet so conquering that they lure new believers off to their brand of weirdness. Now, one way to run off a chrismatic, or to help them stop the cycle of church hopping, is to say, "I know you had some issues with your former pastor. We want God's blessings to be on this church plant, and if this church is harboring unforgiveness, then God's blessings will not be on us. If you want to be a part of this church, first go reconcile matters with your former pastor and get a blessing from your former church, and then you'll be welcome to be a part of this new church." Well, not many chrismatics will do that. They'll get mad at you for suggesting they might have a problem. They'll say ugly things about you and all but call down fire from heaven on you. But don't give in. You don't want chrismatics in your core group. Yes, your church is going to be different from the other churches in town. Maybe your church will even be a new and improved way of doing church. But there's a reason chrismatics have made the rounds, and you do not want your church to be a haven for chrismatics. And then another type of person you do not want in your core group is the different drummer. You know the type. They've read every book and have every tape and have seen every video by a certain TV preacher, and they're always wanting to pass along the TV preacher's latest stuff to you. And what they really want is for your church to be an outpost of TV land preacher. And again, this crosses the theological spectrum. You know, however, you don't share those beliefs. Well, go ahead and run them off. Deliberately teach on something that you know will offend them. Let them know clearly which direction your bus is headed and that where they want to go, the church to go, is not where you intend to go. Now, before you object to running off people, before the church has even gotten started, we're talking about the importance of the core group. The core group must share your core values and core beliefs and core vision. Like a coach needing a team that will carry out the game plan without trying to run their own plays or do their own thing, a church planter needs a core group who will cooperate and not cause problems. You see, the enemy, the roaring lion that 1 Peter 5:8 speaks of, is prowling around looking for people to devour. And the enemy is especially at work in attempting to stop churches from getting started. Church planters must be wise to the kind of people the enemy uses. Yes, you can gather a core group from a sponsoring church or through other believers or by advertising on Christian radio, but your best core group members are going to be the recently unchurched. First of all, as the Nehemiah Project material points out, these people, the unchurched people, no lost people. When you win one of them to Christ, the door is being opened to their network of friends and family who also need Christ. Remember when Jesus called Matthew, how Matthew threw a party and invited his friends so that they could meet Jesus. Lost people provide an inroad to a community you'll never be able to reach alone. As this course has continually emphasized, church planting is about reaching the not yet reached for Christ. If the core group is too churchy, the veteran church members who have few contacts with unchurched people, then the outreach efforts of the new church will be negatively impacted. The exception is if the core group is made up of Christians who move to a new area as part of a church planting team. Then any contacts new people make provide opportunities for the new church to grow. A church planter I know who had started two large churches announced that he was moving across country to start a new church. He said he was going to do this in 6 months from now. Well, he began hearing from people who were interested in going with him to visit the new church. And 20 adults, 15 children. It was an instant church the first time they gathered. Well, to prevent the church from getting ingrown, he recruited home group leaders with the understanding that the leaders were to divide and multiply the groups as quickly as possible. Well, the church grew to over 300 in just a couple of years. Now, it was not all smooth sailing, as there were people on the church planting team who should not have been there, but the effectiveness of a committed core group was certainly demonstrated in the way the home group leaders functioned and the way the church planting team gathered friends, neighbors, and co-workers. Through a network of home groups, this church grew. Other methods that have proven to be effective in reaching unchurched people are the following five methods: the door-to-door survey, the telemarketing survey, the phone campaign, the core development mailer, and servant evangelism. So let's look at each of these five methods. As Rick Warren tells in the Purpose-Driven Church, Saddleback Valley Church was started through his door-to-door survey, where he asked questions like, why do you think most people here don't attend church? Evangelism Explosion International has a survey forum that has worked in many communities. And there's an organization called Canning Hunger, led by Norm Wan, W-A-N, that has a program where individuals go door-to-door collecting food for a downtown mission or a church food pantry. In a couple of weeks, you come back to the same house for more food. And after a couple of visits, you begin by explaining that you're part of a new church that you're planting. So you're building relationships, and the next time you come, you bring them a brochure and you invite them over. There's a website on this. It's www.canninghunger.org. That's www.canninghunger.org. That's the door-to-door survey method. Another method is the telemarketing survey. And the Phones for You program has helped launch over 1,800 churches. You and your core group will call people on the phone and ask if they'd like to receive more information about the church. Over 2 months, the people who respond are sent 5 mailers inviting them to the first service. Now, Phones for You, this is not as effective in some areas where many people have unlisted numbers, and call ID is also a problem. But if you're calling from a church office, people are less likely to pick up and listen to what you have to say. So call from a personal phone so that people will see that it's not simply a salesman, is the advice that's been given. But a telemarketing survey. I've known of churches that have started through this. The phone campaign, it really is a numbers situation. The fact is that if you're going to call a lot of people and get a little response, but if you make 55,000 calls and 2,100 people are interested of which 200 attend the first service, well, that's a significant response for a new church. I've known two churches that started this way, both made in the neighborhood of 20,000 phone calls and had a first Sunday response of 150 to 200 people. Unfortunately, one of the churches went to 40 people the second Sunday and only gained a few people who came and stayed beyond their core group. And some of the core group dropped out as well, as they became disillusioned that their efforts had not been rewarded. But the pastors I've talked to who did a big phone campaign wish they had waited until they had more infrastructure in place before the big launch. Another way is the core development mailer. And this seeks to reach initial families who will become a part of the core of the new church plant. A brochure with a a return response card is mailed to the target area. The brochure announces a new church start in the area and asks for information if they're interested. By returning the reply card, the individuals know the church will be contacting them. Teams go out and visit the responding families, many of which are potential core group members. Again, the numbers may seem high. Perhaps 10,000 pieces of mail with only four or five families indicating interest. But remember, you're after core group people. And when you start without anyone, you have to start somewhere. This mailer instantly gives you the church planter prospects to go and visit. Many of them will be screened out, but we'll also see some good potential core members along with them. Well, in the Theology of Ministry course that you may have taken, it may have been your first acquaintance with the concept of servant evangelism, as Steve Shogren explains in Conspiracy of Kindness and in other books that he's written. Well, consider kindness outreach projects as a way of church planting. Begin drawing a map to your church before you even have a place to meet by showing God's love in practical ways through free car washes, light bulb giveaways, by offering to rake yards, by giving away cold drinks on hot days or at busy intersections. I met Steve Shogren just a few months after he and Janie and their small children arrived in Cincinnati. When their church was just a handful of people, they began doing outreach projects. Even before Steve had terminology for the concept, they just felt it was the right thing to do, to demonstrate God's love through acts of kindness that caused people to ask, well, why are you doing this? Church planting through servant evangelism goes from envisioning a church that will someday impact a community to being the church in action, penetrating a community through acts of kindness. Well, with the people you've met and with the church planting team you've gathered, begin a cultivative home group. In this home setting, you cultivate prospects for Christ in a non-threatening setting and in a non-threatening format. A small group cultivative Bible study can provide the answers that people are seeking. It's a key element in reaching people through a new church plant. Well, based on the pattern of the early church in Acts 2:41-47, the cell group will include opportunities for worship, prayer, Bible study, and fellowship. Through the cell group, you're building the foundation for what you want to see in the church: a worshiping, praying, Bible studying, fellowshipping community. We'll start several of these groups and then bring them together for a corporate worship time, and you're on your way to starting a church. With the cultivative Bible study, be sure to put the cookies on the lower shelf and do not assume pre-existent Bible knowledge. You may even have to explain how to look up a verse, how to find John 3:16. People don't know how to navigate the Bible, so be more user-friendly. So the more user-friendly we can make the Bible for them, the more likely they'll return the next week. Watch using church language. They do not understand the jargon Christians sometimes use. Assume they have no prior knowledge and can't understand church talk. Washed in the blood, living water, saved. They've never heard those concepts before. So as a leader, you have to make sure they know what's going on. In leading the evangelistic Bible study, keep it flowing by starting a discussion instead of doing a lecture. Guide the discussion by keeping it focused on the scriptures. Summarize regularly by recapping what's been covered and restate it so that everyone clearly understands the truths you're trying to teach. And ask probing questions that will draw people into the discussion. And there are many good resources for Bible studies like the Navigators provide through Nav Press. As eager as you may be to start preaching, first, focus on leading good evangelistic Bible studies and model what you want your home group leaders to do as you begin turning the groups over to new leaders you recruit and train. You'll also be better able to recruit new leaders if they see their role as a discussion leader instead of as a lecturer. Notice the process of building a core group. Build the initial group through evangelism. Evangelize them individually, sharing Christ in the home and in non-threatening group settings, and ultimately, you will develop a core that then helps to launch your new church. That's how the Nehemiah Project Manual expresses it. But maybe the core group talk still seems premature. How do you find prospects? Well, begin with the people you know. Set out to build relationships from the beginning. It's on the foundation of relationships that people will respond relationally to Christ and to the concept of a new church body. Relationships are the key to building the church because people are looking for friends. People who want friends reach out to make friends. New churches interested in evangelism will prioritize relationship building. Because you're looking after unchurched people in your church planting efforts, look for people in transition. People who have moved into the community, newly married, new parents, newly divorced people, people in crisis. Letting people know that you are there in their time of transition will show them that you care. They are more likely to be responsive during these times in their lives to the gospel. There are lots of ways to gather prospects for your new church. Anything from a block party to a neighborhood vacation Bible school, sports clinics to seminars, subdivision barbecues, dinner parties, dessert parties, anything you can think of in your setting to let people know you're there, to be of benefit to them, and that you're there to start a new church. Short-term mission teams can also be a helpful way of getting the word out that there's a new church in town. This is kind of like a SWAT team. This was, you know, special, willing, and able kind of team that's coming in. But one on a summer mission trip to Torreon in central Mexico, our team went door to door to assist Daniel, the church planter. We invited people to a street meeting that evening and prayed for people as the opportunity arose. From there, Daniel and his core group followed up and got to know the people who came to the street meeting. You see why new churches are so effective at reaching unchurched people? Well, the pattern is that as churches get established and possess buildings, the type of outreach efforts that we've been describing stop happening, as everything begins to revolve around activities at the building instead of going where people are. The first baptism we had for the first person who became a believer at our first church plant was a real time of celebration. While I had the honors of doing the baptizing, I would have liked to have had everyone with me in the pool who had something to do with Lynn's conversion. The host of the home group, the worship leader, the believers who had patiently answered her questions, the Christian radio station who had aired our ad that she had heard, the people who had prayed for years for her salvation. Her conversion was a real group effort. Well, church planters need good core groups. Well, how are you going to gather your core group?